Coming to you from the bottom of Lake Agassiz, welcome to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. I'm a former game warden, a current biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. If you're new to the program, welcome. Glad to be a part of the second weekend of pheasant season in North Dakota. Hoping you and yours had an opportunity to get out there and to enjoy a little bit. Or maybe if you haven't, some people take off the first weekend and wait until the second weekend when they see a little, maybe just a little bit less traffic, or maybe the draw of some great waterfowl, some of the best duck and goose hunting happening right now in the middle of October. Some of the guys and gals maybe don't duck and goose hunt or have gotten a month's worth of duck and goose hunting and drawn into the archery deer season as the buildup of the shortening days and a little more hormones running through those deer, a little more ruddy type activity coming along. And prior to the deer gun season that opens up in just a couple of weeks as well, drawing a few hunters away. So there are some people that may be just enjoying their first weekend, the second legal weekend of pheasant hunting in North Dakota. I hope you have an opportunity to enjoy as the calendar slowly starts to give way. A little less October behind us, or excuse me, a little less October in front of us than there is behind us. Nothing to complain about. For many people, October is the absolute best time of year. Now, when we talk about disease issues, Dan Grove is a wildlife veterinarian for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. And with the shrinking deer herd in North Dakota, mortality factors from severe winters, lack of reproduction, are of a great concern. In fact, there was cheering when we heard that the number of car deer collisions in North Dakota had shrunk by 25%. That was from State Farm Agency. It came out that the number of car deer collisions last year had shrunk. The insurance agents enjoy that. The mom and dad who are concerned about their kids driving home from a football game, from practice, from a dance. Anytime we see fewer car deer collisions, that's a good thing. I know in the back of the mind, the small town body shop doesn't mind seeing a fender bender come in. But when you talk about the overall deer population, you've got mortality that happens from guns, rifles, from archery hunting, from muzzle loaders. You have poor reproduction, which we've seen from the hard winters. Winter mortality from just plain old-fashioned starvation, from predators. And then there's also the disease factor, which has taken place in southwestern North Dakota with EHD, epizootic hemorrhagic disease. Dan Grove, a wildlife veterinarian, to explain a little more detail as to what causes EHD, Dr. Grove.
EHD is caused by one of two families of viruses. There's a EHD virus, and then there's also a blue tongue virus. And so a lot of times you'll hear people call it blue tongue. Well, blue tongue is a more common name for domestic animals whenever they get it. So sheep and goats, their tongue will actually turn blue. But it's caused by a virus that's spread by a midge, a Culicordia species. And so essentially, midge bites an infected animal and then goes and bites an animal that's not infected and spreads the virus that way.
Beyond the actual deer population and the impacts to the deer, Dan, let's clear up that if hunters have a deer that may have been stricken with EHD, what kind of a concern is there in terms of contact or consumption?
Well, typically the deer, because they're running a fever, the course of this disease is fairly quick in North Dakota because it's not as frequent that we see outbreaks. And so the deer, there's not a herd immunity like there are in the South. So our deer, usually within 72 to 96 hours after showing clinical signs, are more than likely going to die. So they're sick acting. They'll head towards water. They just basically, a lot of reports we get, it's an antsy acting animal. It's just pacing. It can't figure out what it wants to do. And that's probably just the fever state that it's in. So, just not doing well. But they're clinically, that's the way they look. But health-wise, they look like they're a big, full-bodied animal. And they're, able to get into the winter and do what they would normally do, but the virus does not affect humans at all.
Let's shift gears and open up a little more broader from the specific localized area of EHD to the statewide concern about CWD, chronic wasting disease.
Yes, we had our first positive in 2009, and then we found one additional positive in each of the years of 2010 and 2011. Last fall, even though we're doing surveillance, down in 3F2 is where we have it. We did not find any new cases, but that doesn't mean we're free of it or by any means. It just means we didn't detect it last year. And part of that could be that the deer numbers are lower because in 2011 we did have that EHD outbreak and that area got hit pretty hard, and so there just weren't as many deer. So that actually probably helped us. It's kind of a bad thing that we're losing that many animals, but in that particular unit, it's probably better that we have less animals for a little while.
Hunters and citizens alike are confident that the continued surveillance is being done by the Game and Fish Department. Update us on CWD surveillance for North Dakota.
So this year, again, we're going to be doing surveillance in 3F2, and we'll have the same number of sites that we've had in years past down in that region. But then the big unit that we're doing surveillance in is going to be the units that are in the eastern third of the state. So anything basically east of 281, those units are the ones that we'll be focusing on this year. Collection points, usually local meat processors. Sometimes it's the local True Value or a gas station or something like that. But typically it's they're voluntary drop-off points. People can provide us with their heads and we'll take lymph nodes out of them and sample for them. And we'll have probably this year about 30 different sites available for people to drop them off, and we'll be collecting all the way through. Right, can't do the whole state every year, so we've been rotating through and doing a third of the state, but we will still sample your head even if it's not from the right units.
Great information, and thank you for the cooperation from all of the hunters that have provided the heads of deer to be tested for chronic wasting disease. But we also understand, Dan, that not everybody just hunts big game in North Dakota. Dan Grove, Dr. Dan Grove, wildlife veterinarian for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. Out-of-state concerns from North Dakota hunters. When we return, it's the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. We're joined by Dr. Dan Grove, a wildlife veterinarian. Should be very specific with that. We're very fortunate with North Dakota Game and Fish to have a wildlife veterinarian position and slot. There's only one, kind of like bighorn sheep biologist. We got one bighorn sheep biologist, one aquatic nuisance species biologist. We don't have a whole fleet of wildlife veterinarians, and we're glad to have Dr. Dan Grove joining us on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. We talked locally about chronic wasting disease, surveillance, EHD, concerns with big game hunters in North Dakota. But we also understand, Dr. Grove, that not everybody that hunts elk and deer is specific to North Dakota. What about the transport into North Dakota of carcasses?
Yes. If it's from one of the areas that's listed in our CWD proclamation, which is signed by the governor every year, if it's a state that has CWD or a state that we've, like Colorado, Wyoming, anywhere in the state because the disease has spread so far, hunters are required to bring back meat only, and for trophy mounts, the head needs to be completely clean before it's brought back in. No neurologic tissue from the spinal column or from the head is allowed to be brought into the state.
Okay, we're covering lots of bases with Dr. Dan Grove because of the vast amount of experience that a wildlife veterinarian has knowing domestic animals through their training and then their specialized training in wildlife as well. Wanted to quickly ask you, with all the waterfowl hunting going on, with the blue-green, the algae concerns, with hunting dogs, the crossover between wildlife veterinarian and domestic and dogs as well, Dan?
Blue-green algae, it's a normal algae that grows in the ponds and things like that. And then when we have years like this where we've had a lot of moisture and then really hot weather and then cool weather and then hot weather, it actually promotes the growth of this particular algae. It's one of many different algaes that produce toxins. And the toxins are in these particular blue-green algae actually are very very potent, I guess would be the easiest way to describe it, and can really affect a dog fairly quickly. Sometimes as soon as they come out of the water, you'll start seeing some respiratory distress, and they aren't doing right. And so we just want hunters to be aware of, just scout your sights before you let your dog in the water. Just be aware that we do have this issue, and this year the conditions are right for it. We've not documented that I know of any deaths this year in hunting dogs, but every year it seems like we're starting to see more and more hunting dogs that are succumbing to blue-green algae and toxicity.
We talk about being aware before your dog goes in. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of things in life where once you've broke the ice, there's no going back. Once the horse is out of the barn, there's no going back. Once the dog jumps in, as you mentioned, that's a pretty bad situation. What should they be looking for? The obvious, I'm assuming?
It kind of says it in the name. It's kind of a bluish, greenish tinge. And if you ever have any doubts, just keep your dog out of the water, or if they go in the water, wash them off right away. Bring some water with you to get their coat cleaned and things like that. And one of the best things you can do is to actually find out, if there's a veterinarian in the area that you're going to, know where they're at ahead of time, have their phone numbers, make sure that there's emergency contacts and things like that. So it could be a rattlesnake bite, it could be anything, but just to make people aware of, don't just worry about your own health, worry about your hunting dog's health too.
But also being realistic, is you're not always going to actually see it. I mean, so after they go in, are there symptoms to be looking for?
Basically, like I mentioned, the respiratory signs, they'll go down, and they won't get back up. Some people think they're just exhausted and they're passed out, but there's an abnormal breathing pattern and things like that.
Probably makes sense with a lot of the unknowns and the variables. It'd be to get them to a vet ASAP.
Get them to a vet is your best bet. Get them to a vet right away and let the vet know that you think it might be blue-green algae or whatever you were doing. Just make sure that they have as much information as you can provide them with.
Great stuff. Great topic on a year when the frost coming really, really late this year. When you talk to meteorologist friends, you understand that typically your frost will be happening around September 21st, around the actual start of the calendar year of fall. So a lot of stuff going on that maybe normally wouldn't be issues at this time of year. And a couple other things to bring to light here as we roll through the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. When we talk about issues that are facing hunters in North Dakota, there's been a lot of discussion about the changes in habitat and the changes on the landscape with the pheasant season that opened up last weekend, what hunters found, or probably more aptly, what hunters did not find. And the CRP acreage has shrunk considerably from past years. The plots acreage has been reduced from over 1 million acres. Private land open to sportsmen, from over 1 million acres down to about 750,000 acres. CRP continues to dwindle from the peak in about 2007. That lined up with the peak pheasant hunting. The peak rooster harvest in North Dakota was around that 2007-2008 year as well. No coincidence. But let me also just give you something else to understand, is that a lot of it comes down to the economics. And there's been pretty visual, pretty in your face economics of how much land rental rates have increased and the price of corn and the price of soybeans. I'm not taking issue whatsoever. I am not taking issue whatsoever with a landowner's choice of what they choose to do with the land that they bought and they need to pay the taxes on. In fact, I go so far as to thank those landowners that continue to provide access, to provide opportunity for hunters. And I thank them for that, because without them, we're not going to have a place to hunt. The fact of the matter is, Plots was never designed to provide everybody a spot to hunt. And I don't think anybody involved in the Plots program would argue the case. It was more of a supplement. And maybe over the course of time, people got a little too accustomed to having the Plots and the CRP. Because as I said before, remember, Plots did not exist before 1996. CRP did not exist before 1985. A lot of stuff to chew on as we roll through the second weekend of pheasant season, the open pheasant season, the turkey season as well, on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. And welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. Still to come on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live, we'll give you a little idea of the outdoors recreation in Minnesota. CJ Johnson joins us. He's a regular feature on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Find out what's going on in the Minnesota side of the hunting, fishing, and the outdoors as well. Just ahead here, we're going to be joined by Pat Sockdill. She'll provide us with a Central Dakota Outdoors report. I'm always interested as to what you're finding outdoors. I am. Or not finding outdoors as well. Shoot me an email. It's outdoorslive@gmail.com. That's outdoorslive@gmail.com. I want to throw this out there in the heart of hunting season is to give some consideration to becoming a volunteer hunter education instructor. You ever thought about doing that? Because if you're like me, somebody took the time and volunteered and provided you mandatory hunter education in North Dakota. The requirement is mandatory for anyone born after December 31st, 1961. The requirement is mandatory. The instructors, the 600 to 700 instructors across North Dakota, volunteer their time to provide an opportunity for that hunting heritage. So if you've ever thought about it, it's not a huge undertaking. In fact, if you've got the desire to do it, we provide all the training, and it's not that extensive of training. You don't have to be a professional hunter. You don't have to be a trained teacher. We need people willing to teach gun handling. We need people willing to help grade tests on test night. The class itself, probably in that 12-hour range, and you've got four or five other guys that help. In fact, if you know a group of guys in your neighborhood, in your town, in your community, that you think, you know what, we could do this. We could do this for our town. We could do this for our kids in our community. Because without that, the heritage of hunting is going to be going by the way of the buffalo. So again, it's not a huge undertaking. It's not a huge time commitment. The training, the materials, we do provide everything that you need, from DVDs to the guns for the gun handling and everything that you need. So if you're interested, shoot me an email, outdoorslive@gmail.com. Pick up the phone, call me, 281-1220. Ask your local game warden the next time you see a biologist, anyone, please. We'd love to have you climb along board. Hey, let's climb on board and welcome Pat Sockdill back to the program.
Welcome to the Central Dakota Outdoors Report, a look at fishing and outdoor activities throughout eastern North Dakota and the Missouri River system. Even though the outdoor emphasis is on pheasants and waterfowl in North Dakota, those anglers going out on Devil's Lake continue finding fair to good walleye success, working structure, and around the bridges with jigs and minnows. Other southeastern and south central lakes generally remain quiet, although cooling Red River water temperatures have resulted in a good fall catfish bite, with bigger fish now starting to come in. And, as a bonus, a few smallmouth bass and white bass are hitting as well. Farther west, though, low water levels on the Missouri River remain a limiting factor to fishing activity. That, plus it's hunting season. Anglers accessing from the Hazelton Ramp need to use caution and follow along the shore to get into the river channel. North towards the tailrace, anglers are also struggling at times with access depending on the timing of flows from Garrison Dam. Try the chutes and around the honey hole from boats or look for shore fishing success along the boat ramp and the rocks. Over on Lake Sakakawea, some salmon success continues from boats along the face of the dam, Government Bay, the intake structure, or Scoria Bay. Try maps or spoons from shore with fair success in Scoria and Government Bays and along the intake rocks. Best success is in the morning, although overall boat and shore success is still somewhat slow on both the river and Lake Sakakawea. Lake Audubon is also somewhat quiet, although a few anglers are fishing along the east end embankment. Overall, the emphasis is on pheasants and waterfowl. The opening weekend of pheasant season saw mixed success, with some areas producing fair numbers of birds. Overall, though, hunters are working harder and logging more miles to get any number of birds. It could change a little, though, once row crop harvest is complete. In general, North Dakota is experiencing fewer pheasants, in part with habitat loss and weather-related poor nesting. Be careful with identification because there are still numbers of uncolored birds. From a waterfowl perspective, some lesser Canada geese are showing up in areas of North Dakota, along with a few swans. Snow goose numbers are limited yet, though, and there hasn't been any really big push of migrant ducks yet. Some local ducks have moved out as well.
Appreciate that report, Pat Stock, the Central Dakota Outdoors Report. As you head outdoors, a common theme across North Dakota and the Midwest is the extremely wet conditions. That snow, did you see the snow again in western South Dakota? We've had flurries in and around the area. As soggy and as muddy as those side roads are, I cannot emphasize enough that hunters need to do their part to keep from being the ones that rip up the roads. Now, where we live, there's sugar beet harvest that is really detrimental to the foundation of the roads themselves. So it's not just simply hunters. Way too easy to point the finger at hunters when it can be the local kids coming home from the game that want to go mudding. When there's energy development, when there's expansion of ag production, it's not just the hunters. It isn't. But I will say, don't be the one. Don't be the target that the landowner can say, it was those duck hunters that I saw. Don't be that guy. A couple other news and notes from North Dakota to pass along to you as we prepare. We're going to be connecting here in just a few moments. We'll be joining CJ Johnson as well. But late fall trout fishing in North Dakota? Yeah, you can do that. Morton Pond on I-29, just north of the Wahpeton exit. You drive by it a lot? Well, that has been stocked with half-pound firehole rainbows, rainbow trout, in October in North Dakota. Go get them, folks. Not just in Morton Pond, also some other areas across North Dakota. McGregor Dam in Williams County, Lightning Lake, McLean County, Fish Creek Dam, Harmon Lake in Morton County, along with some rainbow trout, some Shasta strain rainbow trout, stocked in the Turtle River. That's near Arvilla. 115 went to the Owls Pond, right near the Game and Fish Department office in Bismarck. So kind of some neat opportunities this time. You can't go wrong as you get outdoors across the prairies of the upper Midwest this time of the year. You're listening to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. And welcome back to the last shot for this weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. I should let you know that I do accept your emails and comments and questions at outdoorslive@gmail.com, outdoorslive@gmail.com. Maybe not just specifically for this program, but I also use that Monday through Friday, 6:20, when myself and the Big Kahuna do an Outdoors Live update. And then also we take your phone calls on the Jack and Sandy Show on Thursdays, about 1:40 on the Jack and Sandy Show. You can call in and let us know what's going on outdoors in your backyard. OutdoorsLive@gmail.com. In just a couple of moments, we are going to connect with CJ Johnson. CJ Johnson with the Minnesota Outdoors Report, a regular feature on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. I know there's so much focus right now on the here and now of the pheasant hunting and the waterfowl hunting. But we should also mention that coming up soon, really soon, is the deer season, both North Dakota and Minnesota. And Minnesota does a governor's deer opener. And they've been doing it for 10 years. The 11th year is this year. And it's coming to Fergus Falls. Governor Mark Dayton, Minnesota DNR Commissioner Tom Landeher, others from Minnesota Tourism as well. I say that because C.J. Johnson was the inventor. He brought about the first ever governor's deer hunting opener. A lot of pageantry, a lot of excitement over the deer opener, whether it's North Dakota or Minnesota. And C.J. Johnson, again, just around the corner here, but you might want to check in and see if that's something that is on your calendar. November 8th, they'll start things off in Fergus Falls, on November 8th. And now for a look at the outdoors of Minnesota, the man who invented the Minnesota Governor's Deer Hunt years ago, we join our good friend C.J. Johnson, a Lisbon, North Dakota native, and each week he connects us a little closer to the outdoors in Minnesota. C.J., thanks for joining us, my friend. What's new in Minnesota's outdoors, bud?
Not too much, other than it got cooler really well around the state and so forth. When you're talking about the deer hunt that comes up in November, when we put that together, I didn't realize I had to be the deer. And there was an awful lot of shots taken at me. I don't know. Luckily, it wasn't a very good shot. Anyhow, back to fishing over in Lake Mille Lacs. Derry's Boat Harbor up there says with the water temperatures slightly dropping, the nighttime crankbait is really the best one for improving on walleye pickup. Minnows, best option for walleyes during the day on the shoreline breaks, about 11 to 18 feet down on the edges of gravel, and then also down 18 to 22 feet in some of the deeper spots where you want to look a little harder. Lake of the Woods, tourism up there says anchoring and jigging continues to produce walleyes 23 to 28 feet down, out of Morris Gap, Lighthouse Gap, Zippo Bay, and 4 Mile Bay. All of those are four key areas, by the way, Lake of the Woods. Want to move shallower, about 8 to 16 feet late afternoon and evening hours. Crappies there are suspended about 33 to 35 feet down. While Reed Sporting Goods over in Leech Lake says a jig and a minnow is producing walleye 6 to 10 feet along the wind-driven points and the shorelines, such as the Meadows, Big Hardwood, and the shoreline of Walker Bay. Walker Bay is a really great place to fish on Leech. Muskie also shoreline-related right now in Walker Bay, but more active on the main lake reefs, such as Pelican Island area. In the Wilmer area, Brad's Bait Shop there says walleyes are hitting minnows 10 to 18 feet down. Eagle Lake, 10 to 30 feet down on Green Lake. Both lakes producing panfish in about 14 to 20 feet of water. And Beck Arndt over in Detroit Lakes is reporting water temps have dropped to the mid-50s now on most of the DL area lakes. Most of the walleyes are setting up in deeper water off some sharp breaks. Now you can look for the 20 to 40 foot depths on most of the lakes to be active. Jigs or rigs and minnows are the go-to method right now for taking active fish. Muskie action on Pelican, Big Detroit, Sally, and Beers Lakes are on large, taking them on large 15 to 18-inch sucker minnows, believe it or not, under bobbers. Use them in about 10 to 14 feet of depth. It sounds like too big a minnow. It is not. Believe it or not, they're hitting them because they hit them in the side and they really rip them apart. But they hook them. Becker says some of the lakes should start to turn over quite soon now with the temperatures going down. And Becker just celebrated a great big birthday by forgetting about it altogether. You see, I stopped counting birthdays when I had to take off a shoe to add them up. And besides that, I spent half my life fishing and the rest of it, just wasted.
Oh, I love it.
Fishing's always great. It's a catching we got to work on.
Oh, no doubt about it, CJ. No such thing as wasted time when you're fishing. CJ, we always appreciate your accessibility and your consistency. Thank you so much for your insight of what's going on across Minnesota's outdoors. Take care, my friend, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you much.
I always enjoy the conversations and the insight from C.J. Johnson, a guy that's been there and done that with decades of experience covering the outdoors and bringing the outdoors a little bit closer to you and to me as well. I want to, just as we get ready to wrap this edition, this late Saturday evening edition of Outdoors Live Up, is just tell you that when we start looking at the calendar and realizing how quickly October slips through your fingers, is you can't go back, and you can't get it back, and you can't take it back. And rather than just stand here and tell you to put safety on the top of the list and people just kind of get numb to that, I want to always emphasize that safety does need to be a priority, but savor the moment, because when you look back, there's never going to be another October 19th of 2013. And I say it kind of jokingly when I head outdoors, going out to make some memories. And the joke is this: nobody goes out to make memories. The memories happen. And you really don't know until you get there. And there's things that I can recall from hunts with my dad that take place, and it might not even seem like it is going to be a memory at the time. Here's my case in point. The big deer season blizzard, the deer opener blizzard, is like 1984 or 1985. It was before I was legal to have a deer license, but I went along with my dad. We went back to Napoleon every year, deer hunting, and there was a nasty opening day blizzard. I want to say it was 84 or 85. Somebody can correct me on that. And the state basically ended up getting just shut down on the backside of it. We got our deer, and the stories of getting stuck and the conditions that people were hunting in, it definitely had the bucks moving. It had the deer moving, and we got stuck, and we went through snow. And at that time, I think we were living in Valley City, so maybe it was closer to 86. And we stopped and got a bucket of fried chicken from the downtowner in Napoleon for the late night ride. We were planning on staying the weekend, but when the blizzard came, it was, let's go or we ain't getting out of here for a long time. And that was true. The state didn't open back up for 2 or 3 days, 48 hours. I can still remember sitting in the back of Dad's truck as a young kid, driving from Napoleon in the blizzard, in the dark, and heading back to Valley City with a big old bucket of fried chicken, making memories. Making memories. You never know what it's going to be that you remember 25, 30 years later, but that's what the outdoors is all about. I appreciate you joining us for this weekend edition of Outdoors Live. A big thank you goes out to Bob Harris. He's the executive producer of the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Until next time, I'm Doug Lear, reminding you, as always, keep your lines tight and your powder dry. Have a great one out there.